Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to my talk, Collecting Data in a Socially Responsible Manner. My name is Konark Modi, and I work as an engineer with a company called Qlix. We are based out of Munich, Germany. Primarily, Qlix is a search engine. We have our own search index, unlike other companies who just act as a proxy to other search engines. And right now, our search index is optimized for Germany and other European countries, plus US. Apart from being a search engine company, we also have a lot of privacy-friendly features like anti-tracking, anti-phishing, ad blocker, personalized news recommendations, etc. But however, this talk is not just about what we do at Qlix. In the next 30 to 35 minutes, I plan to share with you why the current industry standards of data collection are flawed with respect to privacy. We will actually see some real-life examples of how easy it is for a user to lose sensitive information like name, address, date of birth, passport information, and other information to organizations with which the user has never even interacted with. But we will not just criticize the industry methods of collecting data. We will actually take a look on what it takes to actually build a service which relies on data-driven features, and is it actually possible to solve the legitimate use cases that these third parties provide. So when you interact on the web or a mobile application or use a smart IoT device, unknowingly or knowingly, you are transmitting a lot of data. In the context of websites, you can transmit data in two forms, one as a first party and other to a third party. For example, if you visit one of the sites like booking.com or spiegel.de, they as first party can collect the data. Then a lot of these websites use other third parties to enhance the user experience, know much more about their customers, and serve them with relevant features. And because with the advent of software as a service, a lot of the websites do not actually like to write these services by themselves, but it is very easy to just sign up with a third party, embed a JavaScript from the third party on their web page, and they'll be able to do whatever analysis they want to do. As a matter of fact, earlier last year, Qlix presented a paper called Tracking the Trackers, in which we showcased that 78% of page loads on web have at least one third party that is deemed unsafe with respect to the data that it sends. If you want to know more about this, there is another talk at 2:30, which will dig deeper into tracking the trackers topic. But a lot of these third parties, which are present on 70% of the page loads, have legitimate use cases. For example, you as a website owner want to do analytics, app performance, audience measurements, recommendations on your website, and hence you will sign up with one of these third party services. But we'll see, because the way data is collected, because all these third parties rely on something called server-side aggregation, it is very easy for them to solve the legitimate use case, but also create your complete digital personas on their server side, which in other cases can be exploited for retargeting, can be exploited for selling the information to other providers or whoever bids the highest amount of money. Let me step back in time a bit. In early 2016, early last year, we launched our product called Qlix Anti-Tracking. Unlike the other ad blockers and other anti-tracking technologies available, this is a bit different. Instead of blocking the network call on the client side, we algorithmically try and deduce that what kind of information is sent out from the client side. And if we find that one of the points is a private information to a user, we would like to block it. When we launched it in Germany, we got a call from, let's say, Company X. What Company X's complaint was that Qlix anti-tracking is malfunctioning their data collection systems. They are starting to see some values which are garbled. And they said that they are an audience measurement company doing analytics, and they are not into tracking the users. So we were like, OK, let us take a look in our data collection streams and see, is our anti-tracking behaving which is not intended? So we checked our data streams, and then we replied them back that actually you are tracking users. Take a look at the data dump that we sent you. You can easily know that this is the same user who traversed on 20 different websites. But then they replied like, no, but that's not our actual use case. We have a privacy policy. We do collect the data in this form, but we never use it. And we only plan to use it for audience measurement. And we were like, but this is exactly what tracking is. And if you actually want to do audience measurements and that's your only goal, we can explain different techniques which will help you do audience measurement and not track the users. So after that, we had a couple of meetings. We actually showed them a proof of concept in which we solved their legitimate use case of audience measurement without tracking the users. But then there was a radio silence. Neither did we see them implementing these new techniques, nor did they reply back to us that why they cannot use this client-side aggregation technique. So at the end of the day, we formed three hypotheses on why that company X never took the approach that we suggested to them. First hypothesis is they are interested in collecting the data and they intentionally want to track the users for business use cases that they never publicize. Second, they are not concerned about the privacy of the users. Between privacy and convenience, they chose convenience. And third, that we could not successfully explain the alternative approach to privacy-preserving data collection, which forms the basis of today's talk, which is how can we collect data in a responsible manner, which solves the legitimate use cases, but also does not track the user. So based on the same techniques that we use in Qlik's data collection systems, which we call Human Web, we wrote a paper last year and published in a conference called BIG 2016, which basically is we created a complete Google Analytics clone based on the same principles of client-side aggregation, and we published that paper there. Then earlier this year, we participated in Mozilla Global Sprints, and we open-sourced the complete code base for this Google Analytics clone so that people can adopt and see what kind of use cases could be solved by client-side aggregation. So let's take a very high-level view of what data collection actually looks like. So let's say you are a website owner and you want to do analytics on your website. It's a very legitimate use case. As a blogger, as a website owner, you want to see how many unique visitors are coming on your website, where are they coming from, what kind of activity are they doing on your website, right? And as I mentioned that before you start building your own analytics system, you would opt for one of the analytics solutions that is already available. Let's say you choose Analytics X as the service. And Analytics X will basically give you a JavaScript code base that you will embed in your web page, and it will start collecting the data. So this is what will happen. Now, when on the left side, when Alice visits your website first, this third-party script will generate a cookie. Let's say right now the third-party script is using cookies to identify a user. So it will generate a cookie with value, let's say A, and send back home the timestamp, the ID, and the website. Let's say you are owner of hotels.com, the website name. Now when a different user visits the website, it will generate another cookie, let's say cookie B, and now it will send the value B, timestamp, and website hotels.com. Now, as the owner of hotels.com, when you will go to the dashboard of your analytics service, you will be able to see the measurement, which is domain hotels.com, unique visitors too, right? But what we actually forget is there is another website, build.de, which is again using Analytics X as the service. And because the way data is collected on Analytics X, they will be able to also identify that it's the same user visiting build.de, right? But as a service that Analytics X provides, hotels.com dashboard owner can only see two unique visitors on hotels.com. Build.de will see one unique visitor on build.de dashboard. This data collection pattern is what we refer to as server-side aggregation per user. For the records to be linked on server-side, you need to have an ID. And that ID could be generated, which could be a long-lived ID, like a cookie which is there for 2 years, or a short-lived ID based on your viewport resolution, your IP. It could be explicit, implicit, or just based on your network fingerprinting. Or the websites or third parties could then opt in to use more shady techniques like canvas fingerprinting, etc. And this method, which is the de facto standard for all the data collection system on the web today, is bound to produce privacy side effects. There is no service which relies on this pattern of data collection which is safe from privacy side effects. The same data set, your earlier use case was to count unique visitors. Now the same data set which can be used for counting uniques, can now also be used for profiling and retargeting. For example, in this case, now company X can use the same data set to also show an ad on bill.de to user A for a hotel that the user visited on hotels.com. You, as the owner of hotels.com, never signed up for that. User A, which is Alice, never signed up for this service. But yet, when Alice visits bill.de, Alice will be shown a hotels.com hotel. Let's take a more realistic example. That was just a hypothetical example of data collection 101. Let's take a more realistic example on how a user can lose its privacy on the web while traversing different websites. So we'll take an example of Google Analytics, not because we have something against Google Analytics, but the understanding is a lot of us are familiar about the use cases of Google Analytics. In the same study that we did last year, over 44% of page loads have a call to Google Analytics. That means Google Analytics has the ability to track a user on more than 50% of the page loads that happen. And actually, unlike other trackers like Facebook, BlueKai, Google Analytics tries to be a more privacy-preserving tracker by not having third-party cookies, by using short-lived IDs, trying to sanitize URLs on the client side. But yet, because it also relies on server-side aggregation, we'll see how Google Analytics is also affected by the privacy side effects that we're talking about. So any website that loads a Google Analytics call will send all these data points to Google Analytics server. So if you have another website that you visit, instead of booking.com, maybe Expedia or something else, just take a look at the network traffic. And whenever there is a call to Google Analytics, these are all the parameters that will be sent. They have different meaning for different websites. But for now, we'll focus on this parameter called VP, which is viewport resolution. So let's say the user visits spiegel.de. On spiegel.de, you will see the timestamp, the viewport resolution, and because the user is not using a proxy network, the server on Google Analytics can also know the IP of the user. Then let's say you want to order food online, so the user uses foodora.de. On this URL itself, there are geo-coordinates, the street name, the PIN code, again, the street name and PIN code here, which also has a Google Analytics call, which takes the complete URL, timestamp, IP, and the viewport resolution, right? Similarly, let's say I checked a booking code on booking.com. I opened it in private window, but again, it has a Google Analytics call, which takes back the same value, URL, viewport resolution, and IP, right? And again, on this page, you can see the booking number, amount paid by the user and everything. Then the user visits Imgur. Again, it has Google Analytics on it. Then the user checks the analytics dashboard, which basically looks like analytics.twitter.com/user/the username. So if your username is privacy week, you will have analytics.twitter.com/user/privacy week. It also has a Google Analytics call, which takes back the complete URL, timestamp, viewport resolution, and again, the IP. And finally, let's say you check your flight booking, which again is in private window, has everything in the URL, booking ID, last name, first name, booking reference, name, has a Google Analytics call, viewport resolution. So again, it goes out to Google Analytics. So on the Google Analytics backend, this is what the stream would look like. The URLs, timestamp, and UID. So the UID is combination of IP and viewport resolution for this example, right? And just based solely on the UID and just based solely on this UID, Google Analytics can now track that all these different URLs and different domains are visited by the same user, right? Your purpose was to do unique visitors, but right now you can see that Google Analytics has the potential to track a user across domains. Not only this, if you focus on the last two URLs, which is basically the analytics dashboard, this dashboard, as I mentioned, is private to a user. So the pattern is /user/username. So if you copy paste this URL in your browser, you will get a 404 or will be redirected to a login page because this is my personal analytics dashboard, right? But because this takes away the URL to Google Analytics, Google Analytics now has the potential to know that this data stream is coming from Konark Modi. So it can actually identify the user itself. Furthermore, if you take a look at this particular example, not only does it send the URL, but anyone who has access to the URL can actually open this URL and access my complete booking. So it can access the packs I'm traveling with, my email address here, my mobile number here, date of birth, passport, nationality. The funny thing is, the Emirates website says that this passport number is masked, but if you do inspect element and look at the hidden fields, it's actually plain text. And it's not just Google Analytics on this page. There are about 13 different trackers who I never intended to interact with. Like, I have never in my life visited Qubit.com, right? But Qubit, again, has the potential to access my complete information. Why? Because this website wanted to do unique visitors and put some third-party tracker on their page, right? And that's why this innocent-looking data stream now becomes a potential privacy side effect, because anyone having access to this data stream can know who this user is, what the user did on the web across domains, access more personal information like email IDs, passport information, right? And hence de-anonymize the user as Konark Modi, right? But to be honest, we are not sure if Google Analytics saves this information or deletes this information. Does anybody else in Google Analytics actually accesses this information or not? Or as a matter of fact, we are not even sure if this combination of IP and viewport resolution is good enough for them to use as a UID. But what we are sure of is that Google Analytics does use some UID. Because if they are not using a UID, they cannot solve this simple use case, which is counting unique visitors. If they start removing every UID that they send back home, they will not be able to solve a simple use case that whether these are four people visiting Spiegel.de or one person who visited Spiegel.de four times. Just based on this data stream, Google Analytics cannot solve this basic use case. To even solve this basic use case, they have to append another parameter which will make it unique per user, and hence they will be able to solve this particular use case, which is counting unique IDs. So now they can answer that these were four visits by three unique visitors, right? And that is why on the analytics.google.com dashboard, when you go and log in, you will be able to see what traffic is coming to your website. But although they are able to solve the legitimate use case of counting unique visitors, at the same time, they are also able to track user across web and compromise the user's privacy. It is highly likely that a user does not even have a Google account at this point of time, and they will still be able to hoard this much data. If you think that this is a practice that is only being done by Google or Emirates or Twitter, then I would like to point out that this is a practice that is prevalent all across web. It's not just Google Analytics. There are so many third-party trackers, and there are so many websites who opt into third-party trackers, and all of them are compromising users' privacy in some way or the other, simply because all these analytics services rely on something called server-side aggregation, which is bound to produce privacy side effects. Furthermore, if you look at this data stream that I showed earlier, you, as a user, you don't know who controls the data, right? Privacy policies are there for every analytics service, but they keep changing, right? Today, they might say that we don't use this PII, we drop the data, but no one stops them from changing the privacy policy, and they can then start using the same data that they collected earlier, which was not intended to use for PII. This data can then be sold on black market or to ad brokers to target users more specifically. Imagine this data stream if government subpoenas your servers and you have to submit them the logs. They having access to the same data stream is impacting the user itself. Or instances of security breaches or malicious employees inside the company selling data is also not unheard of. So anyone having access to this data stream can potentially damage the user's privacy. And this is what we want to move away from. So this brings us to an important question. What can we as technologists, developers, and hackers do, right? One of the answers that usually people suggest is we should stop collecting data altogether. So we've seen all the examples. When we collect data, it's bound to produce privacy side effect. So as an alternative, we should stop collecting data altogether. But we beg to differ. If we stop the collection of data altogether, we will not be able to produce meaningful services which are data-driven. In this digital age, data is imperative, period. If you stop data collection, we will break the wheel of innovation. Companies who are innovating in the space of privacy and data will never be able to exist. And hence, it will also create a data anarchy. People, companies who already hoard your data will still continue to rule. So stopping data collection altogether is not a solution to this problem. Instead, we would like to approach in a different way. What we say is, let's try and change the mindset. We'll say, collecting data is not bad with respect to privacy, but the method commonly used is flawed. Because everybody relies on server-side aggregation, which means records are linkable on their servers, it is bound to produce privacy side effect. So if record linkage will always produce side effects, what can we do? So what we do is, we say server-side aggregation per user is the root of the problem. Let's try and move the aggregation per user from server side to elsewhere. In this case, let's try and move the aggregation per user from server side to client side. That is the user's browser. Now you could question that, why is creating profiles on user's browser beneficial in terms of privacy and not on server? One, because when you are creating profiles on the user's machine, user's browsers, it may be desktop browser or mobile browsers, the user is in control of the data. You can give transparency that what is happening based on this data we've collected, you can already see and introspect on the user's mobile itself. The user at will can delete the data, look at the data, or maybe even opt out of whatever recommendations you're providing. So let's say if we want to make an analytics service based on client-side aggregation, what do we need? So first of all, we need storage on the client side. Thanks to modern browsers and HTML5, local storage is now available in all the major browsers, right? So we can use storage on the client side by leveraging the local storage API. Then we will load a third-party script, let's say greentracker.fbt.co, and we will load it in an iframe, because our iframe is kind of sandboxed, so the local storage will only belong to this third-party tracker. Also, because iframe is sandboxed, the script cannot access your main document. So if you have document, if you have cookies and stuff like that as first party, this third party script will still not be able to access it. Second, only when the user, the website owner wants to communicate with the third party, the website owner needs to issue a post message API, which again brings in control to the website owner. And as a user, because everything stays in your local storage, you can inspect whenever you want and you can do all sort of introspection and debugging on the client side itself. So this is what actually it will look like. If you've ever used Google Analytics or similar services, this is what a snippet looks like, what they give you to embed it in your website, right? On the top is Google Analytics script that you need to embed on your website. On the bottom is this green tracker script, which basically says that what is the site ID. If the user says, I do not want, sets the preference DNT, we will not send the data at all. And this is the post message API, which is used to communicate with the third party tracker. And then this is the iframe in which you will load the third party script. In this case, green tracker. So let's take a look, coming back to again the counting unique visitors example. And we'll compare how it looks with Google Analytics and this green tracker script. So, website Spiegel.de, let's say Spiegel.de opted in to implement Green Tracker service and not Google Analytics. So this is what Spiegel.de will have. So when you visit Spiegel.de, it will load the third-party script. As we mentioned, on the left side, you will see Google script loading. And on the right side, you see the Green Tracker script loading. When the script is loaded, the Google Analytics script, as we saw, sends a message which has viewport resolution and the IP of the user because it goes directly to the server. And on the right side, we will not send anything yet. Instead, we will first open an empty array of state in the memory, and then we will generate two messages, spiegel.de visit and spiegel.de unique visit. Now, we will also populate this state, that spiegel.de unique visit and timestamp. I'll explain the next slide why we do that. And at this point itself, on the Google Analytics background, they will send the data as is, and we will only emit two data points, one the URL and visit, the other URL and unique visit. Now, if you do the same counting of uniques, you'll be able to see the same count, unique visitor one in both the cases. Let's say the user visits the website again. The third-party script is loaded again. And now, in case of Google Analytics, without doing anything, it will still send the call as is. But in our case, because we know in our local storage that this user has visited this website before, hence, it's not a unique visit, we will only emit one event, which is called visit. So on your backend data stream, the data stream would look like spiegel.de visit, spiegel.de unique visit, and spiegel.de visit. And now if you do your MapReduce jobs again and try and count the uniques, the answer will be same. One unique visitor and two unique visits. One unique visitor and two visits. This is one of the ways in which we can remove something called explicit UID, which means appending an ID as a cookie or a query parameter, which is very specific to a user. But even then, it's not enough. Coming back to the same example, even let's say Twitter opts in to use Green Tracker. So when Twitter opts in to use Green Tracker, this is what they will send from the client side. The URL that the user visited, it was a unique visit. The user did a search on twitter.com/search, whatever it is, and visit. But then again there is a problematic URL, which is analytics.com/user/konarkmodi, and type visit. Now, if you convert it to a data stream as a batch and send it to the backend now again has the potential to know that all these three activities happened on the same machine. This is an example of implicit IDs. Again, the backend can still know that the user who visited this page was this particular user, right? So we want to avoid doing these things. That's why, apart from removing explicit IDs, you also need to take care of implicit IDs on the client side itself. Although if you even have an implicit ID in your data stream, it's not as damaging because you don't have a session to link all your activities. This will probably compromise, this particular thing will only compromise this particular row. There is no way now the backend can link all the history of this particular user. But it's still beneficial to remove them on the client side itself. Another common example of losing privacy is referrers. So consider this first case. If you get a data stream like this in your backend, which is twitter.com/mrmcd, which basically means type of visit. So the user visited this particular URL in some point of time. You don't know who the user was, right? But if you append a referrer that a user from this page visited the URL twitter.com/mrmcd, that means that this user was definitely Konark Modi. And this is another way to lose the user's privacy. So this also needs to be handled on the client side. Again, because your data stream does not have any session ID, only this event will be compromised. But still, the user's privacy is being hampered. So we also need to sanitize and mask the referrers on the client side before we send them back home. Along with other things that I've showed, explicit UIDs, implicit UIDs, there are a lot of other checks and balances that needs to be done on the client side itself. For example, you should not try and add too much information to one message and rather send them as different messages. Otherwise, you'll be still able to fingerprint the user based on some things. If your use case is just to do counts at a day level, there is no reason why you should have timestamps at a millisecond level. You should cap the timestamps at a day level and then send them back home. So there are a lot of other things, small little details that you need to take care of on the client side itself. And following all these practices, you will ensure that the data you're collecting is safe from any kind of privacy side effect. So we've only talked about counting unique visitors, and I'm sure many of you would be wondering that counting unique visitors is very trivial. And that is why, as I said, we have a working prototype of Google Analytics clone, which basically picks up the bread and butter use cases of Google Analytics, like unique visits, page loads, goal conversions, insight click-through, visit and time duration per user without using the beacons. And we've open sourced all of this. You can go and take a look at this particular repository. You'll be able to see how using the client-side aggregation and not having any UID to track the user, you can still solve all these use cases. So these are some of the resources that you can take a look at. I think it's a good point in time to mention that Clix as a company does not have any use case to become an analytics service. We do not plan to have our own analytics service in competition of Google Analytics. So this was just based on a POC that we wanted to tell the community that based on client-side aggregation, you can do a lot more than what server-side aggregation is doing, and you can still achieve the same results that server-side aggregation will receive. So please feel free to play around with these with the code base. We also have a demo site in case you do not want to use Green Tracker on your own website. Go to this website. You can see what kind of data is being sent from Green Tracker, and do we also rely, and what kind of analytics can you do based on just this sole data set. That brings us to another important point. Google Analytics clone is not just one thing that we are doing. In fact, the complete Clix data collection systems are based on client-side data aggregation. We have been running these systems in production for over 2 years now, which is collecting data for over 2 million plus daily active users based on client-side aggregations. We believe that it is totally possible to collect data in a socially responsible manner and yet build meaningful features like search engine, anti-tracking, anti-phishing, ad blockers, without relying on sending back home the complete data stream. We also open source most of our data collection streams and other parts of code that we have. We also publish from time to time our technology solutions via white papers or technical blog posts, so you are free to take a look at those as well. And this is the repository for our open source projects, which basically run on the client side, and how we collect data to build all these features that I've mentioned above, like search engine and anti-tracking and stuff like that. I hope with our learnings and a bit of change in mindset, we all will be able to create data-driven services with collecting data in a much, much more socially responsible manner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You. Fascinating approach to, you know, replacing Google wherever we can. Are there any questions you'd like to ask? Because we have some time. Right in the back.
Hello. I'm Tiberio of Tecnoetico. We are selling hardware compatible with free software. I love your approach, and we also want to store things on the browser and on the client side instead of sending them to a server. What I would like to ask is for statistics, the user can manipulate the data so you get actually not real results.
So it's a valid question that if we solely rely on client-side aggregation, the data could be tampered off and could send malicious data. We also face this problem in our Clix data collection systems. There is one major component that I've not talked about here, which is the human web proxy network, which basically deals with data that cannot be tampered, and we would discard the data if it's being tampered, and again relies on anonymous data collection. But that said, it's a good problem to have, that if you're solely based on client-side aggregation, you need to solve the challenges of how you can detect whether the client is tampering the data or not, right? So for example, one of the approaches that we take is, wherever possible, we try and hash the data on the client side itself. So one reason to do that is we do not want to create a parallel history on the browser, but also the user cannot then make much meaning of the data set. The other thing is, whenever possible, we also try to use data structures like Bloomfilter, etc., which again are difficult to tamper with per se, right? But that said, it does open an attack, which is basically client sending malicious data, or even another third party could start sending malicious data to the backend. But depending on what kind of data you're storing and what kind of application you're trying to build, there are ways in which it could be tackled. And I'll be happy to discuss them more offline if you want to discuss them. But it's possible to protect them at some level. Again, as I mentioned, you will have to change a bit of mindset. The approaches that you do on the server side for detecting malicious intent of user or detecting anomalies on the server side, you will have to change your mindset a bit that how can we do the same on the client side itself.
Wait a second, please. Otherwise, people on the stream can't hear you.
Thank you for the solutions provided. Earlier in the talk, you have mentioned that the user has control over what data is stored locally, and it's transparent. Yep. So maybe we shouldn't make data structures that are hard to understand by the user in order to have correct data sent from the client. It's possible maybe to use some hashing mechanisms to solve this problem?
Yeah, sure. So actually, if you visit this link, which is scanned data, or the other link, which is your footprint, it basically gives a view on your local storage that what kind of data did this tracking script send back home, right? Obviously, there are some data points which are hashed, because if someone else has access to the local storage, we do not want them to learn your history or what you visited. So we kind of hash the URLs which we store in the local storage. But if explained well on the page itself, what kind of hashing you're using, why you are using, and how a user can replicate the same by visiting or generating the new data set, I think it's a good enough approach for the user. Because you also have to remember, when you start using client-side aggregation, you should not save everything in plain text, because then you will start creating data streams which other users could then use against the user. So that is one point that should be taken care of. So to bring in transparency, yes, you would like to show everything that is stored there, but I think you still need to do some kind of obfuscation of the data on the client side, but give exact explanation of what you do and how you do it, so it can be reproduced on the client side.
Thank you very much. Are there any more questions? Apparently there aren't. And there have not been any questions from the stream either, although our stream viewers are, of course, encouraged to send us questions. Thank you very much for your talk. It's been very, very interesting. Please give a round of applause to Konark.